This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Later on the line, joining us on the River Islands guest line, as all guests on 95.7 The Game. If you're on the River Islands guest line, it's okay. You got to laugh through pan. Isn't it time for you to discover the island, Joshiaski? River Islands in Lathrop. You hate to go Hawaiian and bring up the punch, right? We're going Miami. Anthony Slater joining us now. Anthony, good morning to you. What a game yesterday, and all the wrong reasons for the Golden State Warriors. Take me through the atmosphere, if you will, leading up to that game. There was a lot of chirping. I don't know if you saw Taylor Rooks reporting, and maybe you heard Jimmy say this, I'm not sure, but Taylor Rooks of TNT saying, quote, Jimmy Butler saying, quote, I should say, I have nothing to say to Pat Riley, and Pat better have nothing to say to me. Clearly a lot of animosity there. Clearly a difficult breakup. It was chronicled on ESPN and all the national media outlets for the last 6+ months. What was the atmosphere like? The video celebration, all of it baked into the what was supposed to be a revenge game for Jimmy Butler, but it really was a revenge game for the Miami Heat. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning. How are y'all? Yeah, I mean, it was like icy, but it wasn't that like volatile or, you know, you talk to Warriors people, you know, prior to the game in the lead up and certainly after the game, it was like somebody told me it was like 5% of Durant back to OKC, maybe less. I mean, it wasn't volatile at all. I mean, like Jimmy Butler just barely talked to anybody. And they, you know, acknowledge his existence with a pregame video when half the arena was filled because that's Miami. As Steve Kerr said postgame, it's never a rabid environment in Miami. It was some cheers, some boos. It felt like I went to the De'Aaron Fox return game in Sacramento a few weeks ago. That was more lit up as an environment, you know, a fearser welcoming for De'Aaron Fox. So you can feel, especially if you're around, obviously I sat down with Jimmy Butler last week for a long conversation. Like I know some of like the deep, dense history that's under the surface here that has made it. So neither side is feeling good about each other right now, but you didn't really feel it that much as far as from an event standpoint last night.
Why was he so passive? Like just in general, he didn't put his imprint on the game, and considering that Steph's out, and I've got a combination that we'll get to in a second, but I wanted more from him. Why was he so passive?
I mean, he's kind of is passive at times, you know, and you know, they have no, especially early in his tenure, we're kind of pushing him when Steph Curry's not on the floor to shoot more, but you're kind of seeing regular season Jimmy Butler a little bit. I mean, it's in and out, but you know, the Heat are really long. They played Bam and Khalil Ware for a lot of the minutes last night. At times, Jimmy Butler can struggle to finish against length. I think that might have been a little bit part of it. You saw him get a shot block, right? Khalil Ware pinned him off the glass. But if I was to detail my skepticism about this team that goes to even some of their losses, the one they had in Dallas the first time they had Jimmy, it's their inability as a team to finish at the rim over length. It's why I still believe Jonathan Kuminga is going to matter against the better defenses in this league, because it's something, you know, he's struggled a little bit with it when he comes back, but at least he tries to go finish at the rim. He'll muscle his way to the line. And Jimmy will do that with his power moves, but I think part of the reason he didn't shoot a ton last night is because he was just having struggle, like, you know, getting separation in traffic and believing he could finish over that length.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up, because, like, Ware was guarding him to start the game, and he was, you know, basically sagging off him. And then you saw, obviously, Draymond being guarded by Bam, and he was sagging off him. And then they switched a little, and Ware was guarding Jimmy, and Bam guarded Jimmy. But essentially, three times in this game, you had the GP2, Draymond, Butler combinations out there. And there was three non-shooters, and they said, we will dare anyone to shoot from the outside. And the Warriors just were pathetic offensively to start the game, the end of the beginning of the second quarter, and the beginning of the fourth quarter. Those combinations did not work. Do you think they go back to that if Steph is out for another game or two?
I would probably guess you either see Quentin Post, maybe Jonathan Kuminga, but probably Quentin Post, because you mentioned the shooting aspect of it, you know, against the Pelicans. I don't know that, but, you know, they need Moses Moody to hit shots, right? I mean, if he's going to be the shooter, he can't go 0-9.
The Wiggins matchup was bad for him. Wiggins had him yesterday.
Yeah, and Wiggins was, you know, fired up for that game. I thought he played really well, especially defensively. But this is kind of like their issue, right? They have spacing issues. It's part of why it's been tougher to fit Jonathan Kuminga back in, because of, you know, the skill level that they do need is like a downhill finisher. It still adds another, you know, shooter. I mean, he'll take the three, but defenses are going to sag off of him. And, you know, what's Jimmy? I'm trying to look right now. What's Jimmy Butler from three since he's joined the Warriors? 10 of 44. 22.7%.
That good? Wow.
Yeah. And again, people will tell you, like, look at his playoff history from three, right? When he slayed that Bucks team, that 8-1 Bucks matchup a few years ago, he just suddenly got really hot from three in that series. He hit, like, 5 threes in that big game in that series. So it can happen. Draymond Green obviously has had some hot three nights, but the reality is big, long, smart veteran defenses with coaches like Eric Spoelstra are going to dare them to beat them from three. And if Steph Curry's not out there, I don't know how they're going to necessarily do that.
Anthony Slater joining Spadoni and Shasky in the Morning Roast here, courtesy of the River Islands guest line. Anthony Slater covers the Golden State Warriors for The Athletic and right here on 95.7 The Game. And Anthony, real quick, if you were to rank the last three losses, or just give me which one do you think was the worst given the circumstances? I know Steph has been out the last two games, but given the loss to the Nuggets with no Murray, no Jokic, that one in Atlanta where they dropped 40 on you in the first quarter, and then yesterday, what was supposed to be a revenge game, everyone was talking about it, a big Jimmy Butler return to Miami, and it was just a big stinker losing by, how many lost, 26 points, whatever it was. Of those three losses, which would you say was the worst?
I think yesterday, because of the morale standpoint of, like, you know, I remember covering that Durant team, that first Durant team, which was always the happiest version of the three. And the way that they went into Oklahoma City, backed KD and, like, stomped out the Thunder and then wore the cupcake shirts in postgame. Like, that was, like, a galvanizing moment for that team. And, again, I don't – like, last night was not that, but it did feel like a moment, like, you know, in this Jimmy Butler era that has gotten off to such a great start, to really kind of come together behind Jimmy Butler, and you would have assumed Jimmy Butler, you know, having a larger imprint on the game and win that game. And it's part of why Steph was really pushing to get back. But then you started hearing middle of the day yesterday, hey, it like, sounds like Steph might be able to go. And I think that probably took a little bit of wind out of their sails. And then, you know, Miami came out and gave it to him. So I feel worst of the three about that loss. Then I would say the Denver one, just considering who didn't play for the Nuggets and it was at home. The Atlanta one, I don't know. You kind of saw that coming. Cross-country flight. Atlanta, I think, hadn't played like in 4 days. They were super rested. They'd been playing well. They just came out and hit him in the mouth. That would be the third of the three, I guess.
All right, so these big athletic players over the last couple of weeks have just destroyed them. Karl-Anthony Towns, Aaron Gordon, Scottie Barnes, Okongwu, Adebayo, Bam Adebayo was awesome. Cat was awesome. I thought Draymond got destroyed by him yesterday. Just destroyed by him. What is their in-season answer for these big athletic bigs who eat glass on the offensive side of the ball?
I would say number one, like, just, you know, Draymond, he's trying to hunt down this defensive player of the year trophy. Like, he's just, you know, got to be better in these matches, right? Look what they did to Giannis. You didn't mention him within there, and that's for a reason, sure. Right? Draymond was awesome that night on Giannis. So, you know, he's got to play those matchups better, and you got to assume we're really talking about the playoffs, you know, depending on who they face. Like, he's got to win that matchup. You know, Butler, I think, up in his defensive assignments at times, and then, you know, it's again, like, I understand Kuminga's flaws at times and kind of the awkward fit, but when you talk about needing to match athleticism for athleticism, that is the best athlete on the team by far.
Why didn't Butler go up against Wiggins yesterday to start the game? I found that odd.
Well, they went small, right? You know, and it was, and if you're going against Bam, Khalil, where, and also, like, Wiggins, the Warriors know this, Wiggins is not trying to, like, Wiggins didn't take over offensively yesterday. I thought he did all the glue stuff well. He defended well. I think he had 14, 5, and 5. To me, like, their inability to contain Wiggins wasn't the problem offensively. I think typically they've found you want Butler roaming, right? I mean, like, he's a little like Draymond in that sense, although Draymond will take those individual matchups. But, you know, he's more destructive as a free safety away from the play. And Butler really is, you know, he kind of tries to get those sneaky steals and come over and help side. And he sees mistakes. I've seen, and you saw it yesterday, Tyler Hero was coming off something. Mm-hmm. And he saw Hero was, like, already breaking free for a three, like, way before I was like the play had materialized, and he got out there and kind of stopped the three. Again, that didn't matter in the context of a blowout, but I think part of, to your question, I just think particularly at this stage of his career, he's better served as a help side kind of wrecking havoc than, like, your individual stopper.
Anthony Slater joining us here on the Morning Roast. And Anthony, a big topic of conversation from the callers, from Joe Shasky this morning, has been Brandon Pajemski. Obviously, he led the team yesterday in field goal attempts. He was 6 of 16 overall. Wasn't a great shooting night for him, struggling to find it from beyond the arc. Really, everyone was, outside of Guy Santos. 2 of 6 for him there, 14 points overall. 30 minutes also led the team, obviously, in total minutes. And he's been one of the leaders of the team in total minutes for a very long time now, Anthony. And I guess my question is, just on behalf of the callers and the listeners, the infatuation that Steve Kerr has with Brandon Pajemski is what?
I mean, historically, he's one in his lineups. We know this. He's the best plus-minus guy on the team last year. Every lineup he was in basically worked, you know, and he had a great rookie year. We all know that. Obviously, this year, I would say Steve did go away from him. He was starting melting over him. He was minimizing Pajemski early in the season. I think that partly led to the spiral, and Pajemski did not play well, which all sides will admit. And then he came off the injury, and he did look great. And I, you know, at one point during, right when Butler got here, that I think they were like 9-1 in a 10-game stretch. Pajemski was something like +109 in that stretch. And I don't know if it's still the case. You guys could look it up, but he was once again leading their team in plus minus. I know that's not a stat every fan loves to track, but to answer your question, like, historically, lineup data and Steve Kerr and that coaching staff uses it, says that Pajemski, you know, helps bump them towards winning. I think he's had a really good last few months. He has not necessarily, you know, had a lot, you know, really since he's come back from the back injury, he's been okay. Last night, just wasn't shooting it. Sometimes he gets overly aggressive. Sometimes you could say he gets a little thirsty when Steph Curry's out. But the other thing about last night, if you're not playing Pajemski, like, who's your point guard out there?
Draymond. I mean, Jimmy Butler.
That's okay. I mean, that's still like, like, those lineups, combinations are not. I mean, this is the problem. Like, Steph, like, without Steph Curry, they're a deeply flawed team.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not even just the last two games. Without a really good Steph Curry, they're flawed. Where you can go back now 4 or 5 games where, you know, he didn't play that well against Toronto and before he got hurt, or he played very poorly in the Denver game. Right. That's why he rested. So really, the last 6 games, you haven't had like a charged up Steph Curry. And everybody wants to talk about how great they looked on that past East Coast road trip. Well, that's just because Steph Curry was just lighting up the world on that trip, right? How poorly did they play in Orlando? They won because Steph Curry had like 56 points or whatever like that. They still collectively as a team played really poorly around him. So I know that's a long-winded answer for we were talking about Pajemski, but I think part of the reason he's playing more last night is like at least Steve Kerr believes like, you know, you need somewhat of a more of a ball handler playmaker on the floor. And without Steph, he goes to Pajemski a lot.
I understand that. I get where you're coming from. I thought yesterday he was terrible, quite frankly. And a minute of Pat Spencer's not going to kill this team just to get a look and see where we're at. What do they end up doing here with Jonathan Kuminga? Because every single game, it feels like, you know, the Warriors have a gunshot wound, and the paper cut that is Jonathan Kuminga is the one that all the fans want to discuss and argue about in the comment section. My big takeaway was not Jonathan Kuminga from that game. It was Draymond, and it was Jimmy Butler, and how poorly the team played as a whole. But where does that leave Jonathan Kuminga right now, whether Steph returns or not? What do you see from him moving forward here?
Led him in scoring last night, by the way. 15 was the team's leading scorer. Yeah, I know. I think he's trying to muscle his way back into the rotation. He's in his stints, he's probably got to come out like harder defensively, harder crashing the glass. I do think it's being underrated how much he's still like really trying to like gain full trust and rhythm on that ankle. You know, I would say prior to his injury, if you go watch those games, it was like really powerful to the rim, like really attacking the offensive glass. You're not seeing that as much. To me, he's like kind of cruising around the court a little bit more. And I think some of that's the ankle, but I think, you know, some of that is, you know, a younger player who comes back in, you know, not wanting to disrupt stuff, number one, and number two, not maybe feeling like the full trust level of the coaching staff that, you know, believes in him long-term. But like that doesn't necessarily really matter. If he's going to try to, you know, regain a 28 minute per night role, he's got to come out and just make stuff happen and make stuff happen in more role type ways, which, you know, again, we know he views himself long-term more as like, you know, a primary creator and that the efficiency level there hasn't been terrific for his career at this point. But to me, again, I mean, I'll continue to mention it. Some of the stuff he does well is some of the stuff this team is going to need against deeper playoff teams, and they're going to have to find a way to better maximize his skill set and hide his flaws, because if you just have him sitting over there on the stationary bike upset because, you know, he's getting 12 minutes and barely playing, to me, you are not utilizing a weapon that is going to be very necessary to get past the first round, second round, third round.
All right, Anthony, 10 games to go. I'm looking at this schedule right now. Pelicans, Spurs, Grizzlies, Lakers to wrap up this road trip. Fast forwarding all the way to April 13th. It's listed as a 12:30 start between the Clippers and Warriors. Yeah. Right now, as we speak, the Clippers are a half game back. If they win tonight in New York City against the Knicks, they, by virtue of a tiebreaker, are going to be ahead of the Warriors and be at that sixth spot. And the Warriors will be pushed back to the seventh. I say all that to say this. Is it going to come down to that last game of the season to find out whether this Warriors team is a play-in or a playoff team?
Yeah, I think it's very possible. And I mean, you mentioned the tiebreaker already being clinched by the Clippers. That's huge. The Warriors have to be two games away, right? You know, you need a two-game separation heading into that last game for it not to matter. And if you're tied with the Clippers, or I mean, I should say if you're one game back of the Clippers, it wouldn't even matter if you beat them to tie because they would have it. So, I mean, yeah, I would probably lean yes because I don't think the Warriors are about to rattle off, you know, 8 out of 9 right here leading into that game. I think, you know, at Memphis, at the Lakers, and then you didn't even mention, they go right home after a 2-week road trip and play a back-to-back at home against the Nuggets team who historically lately has been destroying them. So I think they got some losses ahead of them. But not, you know, again, Clippers are flawed. They probably have some losses. Same with the Timberwolves. Memphis above them, that Memphis game on this road trip's huge because the tiebreaker's on the line in their matchup, and the Grizzlies have not been playing well. So there's a lot to be figured out, but yes, I think it's very possible that you know, it could be basically a play-in preview type game on the last day of the regular season where winning you escape the play-in, losing you're in the play-in.
Hey, Anthony, appreciate it. A hell of an article you had chronicling all of the Jimmy Butler, you know, him coming to the Warriors, all that stuff that went on in Miami, Steph Curry's reaction, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr, hell of a job you're doing. Keep up the good work, and we'll talk to you next week, man.
All right, fellas.
Thank you, buddy.
That is Anthony Slater, who again joins us on the River Islands guest line.